Hello and welcome to an InsideCollegeHockey.com podcast recorded February 12th, 2008, the day after the completion of the Beanpot Tournament in Boston and a few days after the completion of a huge CCHA series between Miami and Michigan. My name is Joe Vladishevsky, Inch editor and writer covering ECAC hockey, joined tonight by Hockey East writer Jeff Howe and also by Inch editor Mike Eidelbus. Hi, guys.
Good evening.
Hello.
How are you?
I was going to ask, what kind of weather do you guys have out there? Because it's snowed for like the 40th consecutive day here in Michigan.
3 feet in Oswego. Nice.
We're snowing right now up in Boston.
I hate winter.
Okay. I love it.
Enough of the niceties.
Well, hockey season.
Yeah, I got that.
Okay, let's start with the Beanpot, which was the best game, last night's championship game, was the best game I've seen all season. Live, on television, college, pro, whatever. I thought it was fantastic. Jeff, you were there. Your immediate reaction.
Well, I thought Harvard gave an unbelievable effort. I mean, going into that game, I think if you asked people how the game was going to turn out, more people would have said Boston College was going to blow Harvard out. Wouldn't have been a close game. And, you know, Harvard played great. John Hughes was pretty bad in net, so was Kyle Richter. And, for a high-scoring game, really was surprised that BC wasn't able to have that killer instinct at the end there and allowed Harvard to come back once BC went up 5-3. And, you know, BC really outplayed Harvard in the overtime. But, like you said, it was an exciting game. It was fun to be at. It was a pretty good atmosphere. But, the big thing that I'm taking out of this game going forward is if BC plays like this in March, they're probably not going to get to Denver.
There's definitely something to be said about that. But as you mentioned, we saw what they can do when they refocused and re-energized and really ran over Harvard in the overtime period. The thing that impressed me about the Crimson was for them to be successful, I think they needed to do three things. They needed to generate chances off the forecheck and finish their checks, which they did. They needed to keep the puck in the middle of the ice for the most part, which they did. They had to stay out of the penalty box, which they did. And they had to play from in front, which they did not. That being said, they came back and tied the game. You know, after they fell behind 3-2, they got it to 3-3. After they fell behind 5-3, they got it to 5-5, which to me was a very, very important thing for that Harvard team to experience.
Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, a couple things, and we were kind of talking about this last night when we were watching the game, is, you know, another thing that Harvard obviously did well was, neutralize Nate Gerby to the point of where he really wasn't a factor. And, you know, you go back to the last time that these two teams played, Gerby had 4 goals and an assist, and it was a rout against Harvard for BC. I think it's like 7-2 or something like that. So, you know, obviously Harvard figured out how to keep Gerby in check. The other thing was I was really impressed with how Harvard came out and skated. I thought that they really had nice tempo to their game, and, you know, obviously I don't see Harvard a lot during the course of the regular season, but it makes me wonder how come they don't do this, or are they not doing this, you know, playing this kind of up-and-down, fast-paced style during the course of the ECAC hockey regular season?
Well, they're getting back to that a little bit, I think. They needed to find some identity. I talked with a few of their players last week prior to the championship game, and they felt pretty good about how they were going right now, and I couldn't help but think about Boston University as a team that at times has kind of waffled through stretches of the season and found out what they're about at Beanpot time and made a strong run to the postseason. I think Harvard may be going through that a little bit this year. I wouldn't be surprised to see them continue to play well through the month of February and into March. 3 more weekends left of ECAC hockey play, and then Harvard still has a shot at a top 4 spot. Probably going to take quite a run to get one of those, but if they can build momentum through the playoffs, it certainly wouldn't surprise me to see them in Albany for the championship weekend. And also, a game like last night can only help them, being in that position on that kind of stage. And I think that it was a good thing for this Harvard team to go through.
Yeah, and just getting back to Gerby there, this is the first time all season that BC has won a game in which Gerby and Joe Whitney were held off the score sheet. So it wasn't just him. I mean, they neutralized Whitney, who was one of the best freshmen in the country, and Ben Ferriero wasn't too big of a factor either. I mean, all the scoring came. Nick Petrecki scored his first two career goals. Brian Gibbons scored two goals, his first two-goal game of his career. I mean, they had all of the other guys who had to step up to win this thing. And it was so, BC showed its tremendous depth there. But, you know, John Muse, when you're going into, the far reaches there, John Muse was terrible glove side, especially glove side high. And, you know, I would imagine that's a Harvard scouting report because they were talking about trying to go glove side high on him, and, you know, they did it successfully. So, you know, if a team like Harvard, which isn't the most prolific scoring team in the nation, can touch him for five goals, and they can do it, you know, by going basically to one area, what's a team going to do to Boston College, I mean, as early as next weekend when they play UNH, and then in the Hockey East playoffs, or when they play some real solid teams in the NCAA tournament?
I think you kind of, when you look at, you know, how Boston College comes out of this, yeah, you know, they got two wins, they win the championship. But I think, you know, breaking it down a little bit further, it is really a double-edged sword. On the one hand, you got to be, BC fans have to feel pretty good about the fact that they didn't get a lot from their big guns last night, but yet some of these younger kids who, have a lot of promise, and I'm thinking specifically of Petrecki, showed up in big situations and made big plays. That's, you know, as the Eagles move along, that's got to be pretty encouraging. But on the other hand, like you said, Muse was not good last night. And the games are just going to get bigger and bigger. You know, I know the Beanpot is about as big as it gets in the Boston area, but from a national perspective, from a jockeying for hockey's playoff position, from jockeying to position in the NCAA tournament, the games get bigger and bigger from here on out. It'll be interesting to see how Muse handles that, because he was obviously not very sharp last night.
Right, and he has to be the guy. I mean, he is BC's starting goaltender. They're not, you know, bringing in a reserve. He's the one who's getting all these starts. This is going to be on his shoulders. I know they lost Boyle from a season ago and Rooney, and, you know, basically they lost three seniors and two big ones there, but this is essentially, and Schneider, obviously. So this is a very similar team offensively.
Ooh.
And, Motherwell's not there. The big thing is, can Muse closely replicate what Schneider did last year? I know that's asking a lot of them, but, you know, if BC's offense can come out and score four, five, six goals a game, Muse only has to be above average for this team to make some noise. And, you know, above average, Muse was not last night.
Pelly's goal was a great goal. He ripped that high glove.
Yeah.
The one fluttered on him, you know, tough play for sure. Some of the other ones, probably, yeah, he would have liked to have back. Well, the tying goal was a deflection on a point shot. I don't know. Both goalies, it's one of those nights where, yeah, they gave up five goals. They gave up six goals. They only had 20-something saves, but a lot of those goals were just not much you can do about it. I don't know.
Well,
you're right there.
Yeah, I think you're right too. But at the same time, I mean, we've seen this with Minnesota with Jeff Frazee. You know, he gives up some softies. The team in front of him loses confidence, and it affects the way the entire team plays. I'm not saying that this is what's going to happen with Muse, but I mean, you could certainly see something like that. That creeping in if this is something that becomes prolonged.
That's true. Okay. Better performance of the Beanpot consolation game, Colin Wilson or Greg Cronin?
It was absolutely Greg Cronin. You know what? He has a lot of ground to stand on because the refs completely blew that call. I mean, it wasn't even before before BU went and scored that game-winning goal there. As soon as the BU kid, and I can't think of the kid's name off the top of my head now, as soon as he ripped the stick out of the Northeastern defenseman's hands and threw it into the air, you know, everybody I was sitting around was like, where's the whistle? You know, what's going on here? And I mean, it was blatant. The stick went a good 25 feet into the air, and I really don't think I'm exaggerating there. Somebody near me said it went 40 feet into the air. So, I mean, this was about as blatant as it gets. It was a pathetic job by a four-man officiating crew. I mean, there's two referees there for a reason. Each one of them swallowed their whistle. And, you know, Greg Cronin lost it, and rightfully so. Northeastern had the consolation game stolen from them. I mean, who knows what would have happened in the last 4 minutes and potentially a five-minute overtime there. But, I mean, that was a terrible, terrible job by the officiating crew. And Greg Cronin was right. He should be mad about that. And, you know what, out of the 10 guys in Hockey East, the 10 coaches in Hockey East who I would not want to have mad at me, Greg Cronin would be number one on that list. So, I mean, that guy lost it, and rightfully so.
Is BU making a tiny run here, maybe, at a top-five spot? They've won 3 out of 4. The only loss is the BC overtime loss in the Beanpot semi. They got 2 at home against Maine this weekend.
Well, you know, tiny run is a good way to put it because they're on a 2-game winning streak for the second time this season. The other time they did it was November 1st and 3rd. So, I mean, this is a team that hasn't been able to put together any consistency whatsoever at all. And, you know, they talk about it and they say you got to bring it every single day. You got to bring it practice. You got to bring it on game days. You got to be mentally ready and you got to come out and play and show that you want to win. And, you know, they haven't been doing it in back-to-back games. It's really strange. I mean, their defense and their goaltending isn't really up to par right now. And, you know, you're not going to get a good look at it last night because they were playing Adam Crows, who, you know, probably won't see the ice again the rest of the season. You know, the middle of Hockey East right now is so wide open that any team that strings together 3-4 wins in a row is going to have a very good shot at having home ice for the first round of the tournament. So, you know, they're playing Maine. Maine's obviously down. Maine just got swept by UNH in a season series for the first time in school history. So going into Aganis this weekend, although BU hasn't really played tremendously well at Aganis over the last 2 years, but, you know, hey, BU can do something this weekend. You know, doing something is not splitting against a ninth-place Maine team. They've got to sweep or at least take 3 points. And, yeah, they'll be back in the picture.
All right. Hobie. Gerby neutralized by Harvard last night. Kevin Porter and Michigan go to then number one Miami and get 3 points. Porter back atop the Inside College Hockey Hobie Tracker because it's that time of the year when we start to evaluate the bigger games and I think put a little more weight on them. Bus, your evaluation of the Hobie race as it stands right now.
Well, I think it still kind of is this two-person race between Porter and Gerby. And we really haven't discussed, you know, how Gerby's suspension earlier this season, that one-game suspension he had, affects his candidacy. I know that there are many varying opinions out there as far as what role that should play in him being a Hobie candidate. But you know, for Porter, you know, not only did he had a good weekend statistically, 2 goals and an assist against Miami, but, you know, that line really set the tone, I thought, against Miami, just keeping the Redhawks on their heels, and it was something that the Redhawks, you know, they did it, that first period was probably as dominating a period as you're going to see this season, or in any season for that matter. I mean, Michigan just came out and took it right to Miami, and that line, centered by Porter, was the one that that got things started, and Miami really never recovered the entire weekend. They always looked tentative, and I know we're going to talk about this a little bit more, but that, to me, the way Porter's line played, and obviously, you know, in the line, it starts with the centerman, and just how they came out firing and really backed Miami into a corner. Said a lot about the kind of impact he had against, you know, the number one team in the nation.
I think it says a lot about Michigan. I give them a ton of credit for going into that series when people they're in an easy position to be knocked down. You know, they had the Northern Michigan series, they had the Michigan State series, and Miami came in kind of rolling, and they were the top dog. And for Michigan to come out and get a 4-0 lead, and all four of those goals, you know, right around the crease, kind of tentative breakdowns by the Miami defense, Michigan guys just going to the net, burying their chances. I thought it was very telling. Credit to Miami for coming back a little bit in that game, even really making a decent game of it the last 10 minutes on Friday night, and then the 5-5 tie on Saturday. But I was impressed with Michigan's resilience, and I'll keep that in mind at the end of the season, you know, when these games are one and dones and you get to that time of the year when your season could end with a sloppy performance.
You know, this is a question that somebody posed to me yesterday just regarding Michigan and this performance, and the question that was asked of me was, if you're Michigan, if you're Red Berenson, and you could bring back Cogliano and Jack Johnson to this team, would you do it? And, you know, I kind of thought about it for a few minutes, and I said, no, I don't think I would, because I wouldn't tinker with the makeup of this team. I think that the chemistry of the team is such that they're performing at such a high level right now because of the way this team is balanced out. I mean, they've got good, you know, obviously the first line is great, the second line is really good too. Their depth at center probably isn't maybe what they would like it to be, and they're pretty young, you know, other than Porter up the middle. But you know, the defense is I think compared to last year a lot better in their own zone than they were this year compared to last year. They're a heck of a lot better in their own zone. Sauer obviously is better than he was last year. And I think they've got good scoring balance, and we've seen, you know, the freshmen come in, although there's a lot of them, we've seen a lot of them come in and contribute. You know, Pacioretty was outstanding against Miami. Palucha was very good as well. I don't think I'd tinker with the chemistry of this team, despite them being a defenseman short and only having seven defensemen.
Yeah, I like them right now. I think they're good. I think Miami's still good. I really do. And I guess that leads us to North Dakota, Colorado College, Denver. Are those clearly the three teams, as we've discussed all year? Those seem to be the three right now that are atop of the WCHA.
Yeah, I think those are the three. You know, and one more thing about the – I think one thing that happened here with the Miami, Michigan, and obviously we're talking about how well Michigan played, and you know, Miami really was out of sync the entire weekend. I saw them do a lot of things that I haven't seen them do before, as far as just playing really real tentative hockey and making a lot of mistakes with the puck and bad passes and turnovers. You know, I think Michigan gave people kind of a blueprint on how to beat Miami, but keeping that in mind, you got to be able to match talent with Miami, and there's not too many teams. Michigan is one of the few that can really do that. I think we have to keep that in mind, regardless of, you know, how good Michigan was last weekend and how Miami struggled mightily last weekend. I mean, we got to keep in mind that you still need to match talent with Miami, and there's only about five teams at most, I think, that can do that in the country right now.
Miami closes its season this weekend, two games at Ferris, then they host Western for two, and then they've got a home-and-home with Ohio State. That looks pretty good for the Redhawks to get back to what they do well. And WCHA punchline comes in, well, what they do well is beat bad teams.
Exactly.
So, I don't know. We'll see. We will see. This was the big proving ground to me for Miami, and we'll see how they adapt the lessons. I think that's what we've got to that will dictate the success of Miami's remainder of the season. What are they going to take from this, and how will they perform next time they're in a similar situation?
Well, are you looking at Miami to finish out on, you know, this so-called soft schedule? Are you looking for them to blitz these teams, and will it take 3-4 goal wins for them to really impress you, or are you looking for 6-0 no matter how it comes, whether it's 2-1 or, you know, 7-0?
They've done a little of both, honestly, this year. They've won some close ones. They've won some by more comfortable margins. I think what they need to do is, it doesn't even depend on the score. It goes back to what Buss was talking about making the smart plays, being good with the puck in all three zones, getting some better goaltending, and playing at a consistently high level. You know, they're a team that is tenacious from start to finish, and certainly that was not the case against Michigan. So whether those scores end up, you know, 5-1 or 3-1, that to me doesn't make as much a difference as how they're playing in those games.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ferris State's not going to be easy this weekend.
No,
I mean they had actually about their last 5-6 games, and then handled Notre Dame, beating Notre Dame and tying them down in South Bend. So, so they get to play a team that's got a little bit of confidence right now too. And Big Rapids is a tough environment. It's, you know, in the middle of nowhere, and it's a long trip, and it'll be Miami will definitely have their work cut out for them, no question.
What about Notre Dame and Michigan State, briefly? Can they get it back together, or kind of just a February slump?
Boy, that's a good question. Yeah, I think both of them will get it back together enough to make the NCAA tournament. And I don't know if we can really, you know, of the two, I think Michigan State obviously can still aspire to a championship. I mean, they've got the talent. They've got the pieces in place. I think Notre Dame might be a little bit too young, and I don't know about Jordan Pearson, goalie. You know, he's put up good numbers, but I don't know that he's a big-game goaltender. You know, obviously he's not on the level of Lurk. But Michigan State, I think, you know, there's some things that need to happen there. We talked about this before we started. Tim Kennedy has been in a horrible goal slump. He needs to get back on track. The team itself just needs to get back on track and playing with some confidence. And, you know, and then they play a team this weekend in Western Michigan. You know, not a good team in terms of the standings, but always one that gives Michigan State a hard time, especially in Kalamazoo.
Yeah, that's a tough out.
It is very tough, and I think I looked it up, and Michigan, in their last 10 games in Kalamazoo, Michigan State has 2 wins and a tie.
Mm.
And that's since 2000. So, you know, they're going to have their work cut out for them, and I think, you know, like you just said about Miami, it's not so much the score, but are they getting back to playing their style of hockey, playing their game? You know, I think Michigan State has a better chance of doing that than Notre Dame. Notre Dame still, to me, is awfully young. I mean, they got a lot of kids in the lineup.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting. And a salute to the Northern Michigans and Ferris States and Nebraska Omahas that kind of, we have throughout the season written off the CCHA as a 4-team conference, so. Full credit to those types of teams, those middle of the pack teams who are turning things around and getting some points in the league and starting to play well toward the end of the season. So good job there. Hate to be general like that, but I just was. So there. Okay, we started on this with Denver, North Dakota. Foam finger night at Engelstad or no? Not the promotional giveaway.
It depends on which finger it is.
I suppose it does. Suppose it does.
Index or the other one.
Yeah, or its neighbor.
Yeah. Well, it could be index because if they, you know, if they sweep or even take 3 points, they'll be in first place, I believe. They're only 1 point, I think, out of...
CC's ahead.
Yeah, CC's ahead, but I think they're only one... Isn't North Dakota only 1 point behind them in the standings? I don't have the standings in front of me. I should have looked up.
I'll grab some standings. I got standings.
But North Dakota, I mean, they've been
North
really...
North Dakota's 4 points back of Colorado College.
And CC's idle, so if North Dakota sweeps...
If North Dakota...
You know, they're right there. They're tied.
Their fingers will be raised.
Yes.
They
index.
Are number one.
Index fingers.
Index fingers will be raised.
But, you know, we kind of got into the Hobie chatter a little bit earlier. You know, one guy that's kind of moving up the ladder, and in fact we've got him at number three, is Jean-Philippe Lamoureux, who's been outstanding over the last 8 or 9 games in North Dakota's. I think they've got a 9-game unbeaten streak right now at 8-0-1, and he's been tremendous. And it hasn't been easy, you know. Obviously, I mean, he's gotten some goal support, but he's had some nights too. You know, one that I can think of specifically was a 3-1 win over Anchorage at home, where North Dakota was outshot something like 36-16. So, you know, I think if he can put together similar stats, you know, we talked about this two-team Hobie race. I think he can really make it a three-team Hobie race if North Dakota keeps winning and he keeps playing well.
Agreed.
Or a three-man race, I should say.
How about Denver? They lose Trotter. What do you see from that team down the stretch? And is this weekend important to get a handle on what they're all about?
Yeah, I think it is. You know, the Trotter thing is done and gone. And I thought they bounced back from it pretty well against Minnesota. And granted, Minnesota doesn't score a lot of goals. But they had been playing decent hockey. Yeah, I think that they, you know, I know that that Rugseger was out last weekend. I don't know. I'm not sure if he's coming back this weekend. Obviously, they need to get him back in the lineup and healthy. And Rakshani has to, you know, these guys who would sort of been playing this second fiddle role to Trotter need to elevate their games, and somebody's got to step up and take charge and be that go-to guy. And I think it's got to be Rugseger and or Rakshani. I mean, those are the two candidates for this Denver team.
I think that that WCHA race, I just, you know, and this is a discussion we'll have on a later podcast, but I was looking into some of the NCAA at-large tournament snubs. You know, what does it take? Is there a magic number of wins to get in? And you go back to when the 16-team tournament started, the one thing that's really kept, if you've gotten to 20 wins, you've been pretty good as far as getting in the tournament, as long as you haven't choked in your postseason tournament. You know, and I know that's a hard word, but I watched Johnny Miller, and I feel okay using it. But, but you know, I think it just seems to me that it's setting up again that there's going to be a WCHA team who's going to lose their first-round playoff series, not make it to the Final Five, and then they're going to be left out wondering. And there's so many teams that are prone to being that team this year, and especially so because there's so many of those teams. The teams that could finish 7th, 8th, and 9th right now, I mean, really, realistically, could be St. Cloud State, Minnesota, and, you know, Minnesota Duluth.
Or Michigan Tech.
Michigan Tech. Yeah, they've shown they can beat anybody on any given night. And Minnesota State and Wisconsin have a big series this weekend. I mean, not something that jumps out when you look at the schedule a month ago, but right now they're both in good shape to get some points and move up right up the standings.
Right. They're both tied, I think, I think they've got the same number of league points, and you know, I mean, conceivably a sweep either way can really.
Yeah, they're tied for fourth, 9-9-4.
I mean, I think if you look at, I don't think it'll be a sweep either way, but you know, if that happens, I mean, you're talking about the losing team potentially seeing any postseason hopes go down the drain. I mean, those would be two tough losses to recover from, not just from a WCHA standpoint, but a you know, also the NCAA standpoint. But
yeah, overall,
you know,
records: Wisconsin 13-11-6.
But
Minnesota State 5 games over.
You know, the other thing that I was just actually just thinking about today regarding the WCHA is, you know, they've got this the play-in game, and if you look at the top three, you know, I think we can virtually assume, obviously, CC, North Dakota are probably going to end up, they're going to be fine. They're going to be in. Denver probably going to be in. But then you look at this at this 4-5-6. Think about if you're the 5 team and kind of the standings hold it the way they are. You know, you're maybe a Minnesota State playing at Wisconsin or opening the playoffs at home against Duluth or a Minnesota or somebody like that. And then provided you get past that, then you have to play a play-in game against, say, Wisconsin. And let's say you get past that, then you have to play one of the top three. And regardless of whether you win or lose, you got to play one of the top three again in a third-place game.
Absolutely.
I mean, this is for those 4, 5, 6 teams. You know, it's going to be a real gauntlet, and it makes me wonder if this might be the year where a team that maybe has decent credentials prior to the playoffs and still loses in the first round might be better off losing, so they don't have to kind of go through this entire thing again.
Yeah, there is an element to that.
I was going to say, coming out of the East here, you've got, you know, 5 teams that made it from Hockey East last year into the NCAA tournament. You're looking right now at UNH and BC as the only 2 teams that are pretty much locks, because Maine isn't going to make it, UMass isn't going to make it, and BU would pretty much have to win every single game from here on out, you know, including the Hockey East tournament, to get into the NCAAs. So, you know, you're looking at a real down year over here, which could mean a surprise team, and maybe a Providence gets in. But, you know, Providence, you want to talk about a gauntlet schedule. Providence has the hardest schedule down the stretch here. So, I mean, you're looking at, if Hockey East gets a third team in and it's not BU, I mean, it's going to be a very weak team. So you could see some of those teams out west, you know, maybe not having very good years, but they could still sneak in because of how down Hockey East is this season.
The same kind of holds in ECAC hockey, where Clarkson and Quinnipiac are probably the 2 most likely at-large candidates, and both of those are on shaky, you know, ice as it is right now. So more bids out west is certainly very, very likely this year. Very likely. Atlantic hockey, can we talk about the fight?
No, we gotta. How can we not?
Well, I just wonder if are we wrapped out west? I have nothing more to add.
No, we can talk about the west later, in another podcast. The one point that I make, and maybe this will be a tease for our next podcast, is, you know, just because we've got this kind of middle of the pack clump in all these leagues, doesn't necessarily mean it's a good thing for hockey. That's all I want to say.
Okay.
And you can take that as however you want.
Well, I'll take it to the NFL.
Because we're going to... Yeah, exactly.
I gave up on the NFL. And this season was an exception. Because there was 1 or 2, I guess, dominant teams all year long. Maybe not even. There was only the Patriots. Didn't somebody else have 13, 14 wins?
Dallas. Didn't Dallas win?
Okay, there you go. Yeah, those
Green
2.
Bay did,
yeah,
too.
Green Bay won 12.
All right.
Oh, they were 12?
I think they won 12 games. Maybe 13.
13.
Yeah, they might have had 13, actually.
Yeah, they had 13. Anyway, it's the NFL. Everybody, you know, there's 32-team league, and 26 of the teams are going to be between 7, 8, and 9 wins. How is that, you know, well, you know, every year your team has a chance. Well, guess what? Every team doesn't deserve a chance. If you suck, you shouldn't be in playoff contention. That is all. We'll talk more about this. We'll talk more about this later. Okay, and that's why I don't watch Sunday football. All right, Team Canisius, fights.
Pretty nice. Pretty good throw.
Yeah, well, a lot of people have seen the video, I'm sure, and read the box score, and 251 combined penalty minutes in the game. 225 of those occurred during the altercation in which every player on the ice was involved. Goalies went at it, dropped their masks and gloves and had a fight, and both were DQ'd. RIT went on to win the game. You know, reports out of Rochester said things like, the refs lost control early, this is a disgrace, there's no place for it in college hockey. But I think while some of those may be true, it's not as awful a scene as people want to make it out to be. You know, it happens once a year. In some league, some game, even non-league games, it's going to happen. You know, these are the same people who say it in a baseball game. And there's, you know, boys will be boys. There's it's going to happen. You know, let it happen. Is it fantastic? No. You know, were there probably some long Sunday morning conversations with parents and children in the audience? Yes. But to me, it's part of the game. I'm okay with it.
Well, not only is it part of the game, and you know, there's going to be those that segment of the college hockey audience that's going to say this, you know, there's no place for it. You know, I'd rather see two guys drop the gloves, square off against one another, toe-to-toe, and battle that way than to see, you know, what we saw at Minnesota a couple weeks ago when, you know, Darcy Zajac cross-checks a guy in the back, blind. You know, I'd rather see the gloves drop and two guys fight it out face-to-face, you know. People call it barbaric, but there is a certain protocol involved in being an enforcer, you know, at the professional level. And I respect that because I think that the guys that are involved in it respect it.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to run around taking cheap shots, I don't respect that, and I don't think anybody on the ice respects that. And I think that, you know, if you watch enough college hockey, you're going to see guys that get away with you know, running around and taking cheap shots because they don't have to be held accountable. I'm not saying legalize fighting or make it as prevalent as it could be in the NHL where you just get a 5-minute major. But if given the choice between, you know, somebody slew-footing another guy or two guys fighting, I'll take fighting every time.
Yeah. Well, here is the problem with the RIT Canisius situation. Only a few of the players on the ice out of the 10 to 12 or 13 who were out there were willing participants. The cleanest and probably safest fight of the whole deal was the goalie fight. Because they came at each other face-to-face. You know, they knew what they were getting into, and they got their licks in, and then they broke it up. The melee that was going on along the boards, you had some guys jumping on other guys' backs, and those guys were clearly, you know, crouched in a protective stance, you know, because they didn't want to be a part of it. Other guys, you know, paired off and just skated to the wall. But, you know, the thing that made the Canisius RIT situation ugly was that there were some aggressors and some that were more passive, and that's not a real safe situation. So from that standpoint, I disagreed. You know, I don't say that was good or okay, because that's when things get dangerous. But I think, Bus, what you were saying was that if two guys are going to fight and go at it, absolutely. You know, DQs, no place for it, done. But when you get into the bad situations is when you get, you know, mismatches in intent or participation levels.
Right, you've got that kid. And, you know, I don't know his name there, that kid number 8 from RIT punching the other kid in the back of the head as he's skating away. I mean, you've got two kids, you know, one of them wanted to fight, the other one said he didn't want anything to do with it, and the next thing he knows, he's on the ice getting jumped, you know, from behind there. I mean, it was good. I'm all for fighting in hockey. I mean, it raises a level of accountability, like you were saying, Bus, instead of, you know, going around sheep-shotting guys. But, you know, there's a difference between a hockey fight and, you know, a bar fight at 2 a.m. on a Saturday night. And this thing went from, you know, at times a hockey fight, like the goalies you were talking about, into, you know, a street fight outside of a bar. And, you know, there were thugs in there, like that kid number 8, who, you know, needs to hold himself in check and look at himself in the mirror and say, you know, should I be walking around punching kids in the back of the head? You know, if he wasn't on a hockey rink there, I mean, is he going to go do that around campus? No, because he's not going to have 25 kids jumping over the boards to grab his back. I mean, that was a coward move to do. And, you know, if you want to, these kids are all going to get, you know, further penalties. Somebody like that should see his season come to an end because he further escalated it.
Well, and he was probably, fairly, he definitely, I think, was the second most aggressive player on the ice because a Canisius player had left the penalty box to rejoin the fray and jumped on the back of a guy who was certainly not interested in the situation and was kind of just slamming him into the ice.
You know, and I think, once again, it comes to the bigger issue of, you know, trying to clean up the game and get rid of fighting. And, you know, nobody is advocating it at the college level. I don't find that any need to see a fight in a college game on a regular basis. But at the same time, you could tell that these guys obviously didn't, you know, there's a protocol that's involved with fighting, you know, and the guys that fight pair off with the guys on the other team that fight, and the physical guys on team A pair off with the physical guys on team B, and the guys that don't want to throw pair off with the guys that don't want to throw on the other team. You don't run around willy-nilly like this, like the guy from RIT, number 8, who ironically just have, well, I don't know if it's ironic as much as it is just sad that the kid's the team's captain, you know, kind of taking this non-aggressive stance and seeing the kid for Canisius turn around and then coming at him and punching him in the back of the head. And I agree with you, Jeff, that, you know, I probably should have looked this up prior to the podcast, you know, if any supplemental discipline was handed out in this case. But something like that is, you know, it's not just illegal, but it's disrespectful, I think. And I think it warrants additional suspension. I just, and leaving the penalty box, too. I mean, obviously, that's just common sense. Regardless of what's going on the ice, don't leave the penalty box. I mean, that's, you know, those two things, you know, are the real black eyes or the real black marks in this incident.
I think
it just shows disrespect to the game, and you know, two things that are, what do you prove by punching a guy who's skating away from you in the back of the head? You know, what do you prove that you're a tough guy, that, you know, you shouldn't be messed with? You know, are you going to brag to your buddies when you get back in the locker room? Hey, yeah, this guy was skating away from me and I punched him in the head. I mean, you know, you might as well wait until he leaves the rink and hit him with your car. I mean, it's the same. I mean, what's the difference, really? You know?
Tone that down, guys. We're talking about an issue that a lot of people are very passionate about. We've obviously...
when he's not looking, hit him when he's crossing the street.
Let alone, you know, Gladdy being the guy to come in and get this thing back on track.
You know, where's Tanya Harding? I mean, why don't you go hire her?
No. All right. I think...
But you know what I'm saying. I mean, it's...
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
You know, it's like Darius Kasparaitis. You know, he could run around kneeing guys and giving cheap shots out, and then when it comes time for him, you know, somebody holds him accountable, he turtles.
Yeah.
If you're going to do that, if you're going to do that kind of crap, then you also you need to reap what you sow.
Well, in an 82 game season, there's time though. When you play a 30 game season, I know. There's no right answer. There's no right answer.
But you know,
we saw things we didn't like, and we talked about it.
But in the NHL, like you said, you know, it's obviously an 82 game season. You know, these two teams played the next day. Had this been professional hockey, or you know, a league where fighting is tolerated more than it is at the NCAA level, the two heavyweights are going to come out probably the first shift. They're going to go, and then they're both going to get 5 minutes, and that's done. You're even.
Yeah.
And I don't have a problem with that. I don't either.
But the problem is that we don't have that.
No, I know that.
Opportunity in college hockey.
No, I know that.
We have to start with zero.
Right.
And you've got a lot of kids who are playing, you know, playing college hockey who, you know, whether if they're on opposite teams, they could have come up together in juniors or, you know, other things. Like, there are a lot of kids I know in Hockey East, and I'm sure it's exactly the same in the rest of the country. You know, they're friends because they played on another team together for 3, 4, 5 years when they were younger. So, you know, this kid could have, because there's no fighting in college hockey, this kid could have somebody cheap shotting him, you know, 2, 3 weeks from now if he, you know, isn't suspended for a long period of time. He could have somebody come cheap shot him, and he won't even see it coming because he didn't know of a past friendship or something like that.
And another thing is, many of the junior leagues that college teams recruit from, there is fighting.
Mm-hmm.
So
that is true.
I don't know.
I'm not saying what if. You know, it's easy to play what if, but you know, what if we get down the road a month and RIT is playing Canisius in a playoff game, and RIT is going to end Canisius' season. What's stopping the seniors from that team from just you know, complete mayhem?
All right, yeah. Well, then I think it goes back to what you're talking about earlier, respect for the game.
Right.
Doing the right thing, and we hope that that's what comes out of this. Not more fighting.
No.
We don't want more fighting, but we don't mind it when it happens.
No, and it's not...
Is that our official policy?
Well, it's not like the earth is going to spin off its axis if there's a fight in a college hockey game.
True. That is true.
You know.
Because there was a fight in a college hockey game.
Right, exactly.
And we're still here.
We're still rotating.
It is snowing where all three of us are at right now.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'd rather see a fight than a guy get checked from behind.
Me too.
Absolutely.
The knee-to-knee thing is the one that really gets me.
Yeah, I would agree.
That's the one that really bugs me. And it's a fast game, and there's a lot of open ice, and a lot of good skaters who can make quick moves in tight space. But, man, that's the one that makes me cringe every time. Every time.
I tell you, you know, I would honestly, and again, for like the 80th time, this is as a disclaimer, I'm not advocating fighting at the NCAA level. Or at least for a lesser penalty than it carries now, but I'd rather see a fight than this ticky-tack crap that goes on after a whistle, you know, where guys are pushing and shoving and cross-checking. Sure. And, you know, to me...
Go ahead.
To me, that is... What is it, what does it prove? And B, how do you gain? What is gained by taking part in that posturing?
The corniest one to me is the chin wash, because they wear the full shield, so they can't even do a face wash. So they kind of shove it up under the chin strap, and that's corny.
Yes.
Well, and with that ticky-tack stuff that happens after the whistle, you know, especially in league games, you realize how much of a fine line there is from this stuff not happening more often.
Yeah, I would agree.
Well, again, the penalty's too severe. You do it once, you're out the rest of that night and the next night. You do it again, it's that night plus two.
Third
and then
time,
names
it's...
And every paper and every official's watching you, and you're not giving your team a chance to win at that point, regardless of code or who may have checked whom or whatever.
But, I mean, well, we're not going to. We're not going to revamp the rules on this podcast, but
no.
I mean, I think you can have a cumulative penalty for it.
Well, they do, and it's the right
thing. No, but I think you can have one that's not. It's maybe a little bit more reasonable. Let's put it that way.
I don't. I think the penalties are correct. I think the fighting rules are good. I think the incident was not good because guys didn't follow the unwritten rules.
Yeah, that's a good. I would agree with that. I would definitely agree with that.
So, should I give out the email address at this point so all these people who are furious with us can write us?
Sure, all the pacifists.
Inch@insidecollegehockey.com. Please,
Gladdy, what about the kids?
Please use the subject line, put up your dukes.
And we'll send you an autographed photo of Don Cherry.
These kids watch Rocky movies. These kids watch pro hockey games.
Rock 'em, sock 'em hockey.
They play video games where they jump into moving vehicles and pull hookers out. I'm serious.
Well, I do that every day. That's how I get to
work.
And
beat them with baseball bats. I mean, for a mite in Pittsburgh, you know, to see a hockey fight, even though it was not... There were elements of it that were not attractive. It's not an awful thing.
The goalies were ready to go, though.
Oh, great. Good job, goalies.
I got like those guys. It was like Ray Emery.
Yeah,
it was like Emery Hextall or something.
We tap our sticks for the goalie fight. We point and yell from the bench at the other stuff.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
All right.
So you had a question. You had a question for.
I have a question for Jeff Howe.
Yeah, I'm interested to know this answer.
So am I. And Jeff Howe does not know. Okay, here we go.
No prep.
Boss and I are fortunate enough to check out Big and Pop broadcasts on Nesson the last 2 weeks and other games during the season, not being directly in the greater Boston region. The Nesson Bruins promos with the two guys beatboxing and rapping about the Bruins. Annoying, funny, both, catchy.
I think I am the only person in the entire planet who loves that commercial.
Yes!
Well, I'll tell you what, Rook, you're not, because Buzz loves it, and I love it too.
Well, that's good, because... you guys have obviously seen the McDonald's commercial, the original, right?
I don't think I have.
That's a direct spinoff from a McDonald's commercial that was on the air for about 2 months, and you know, just a couple months ago. So that's where that came from. It's a direct knockoff of that. And you know, I think everybody I've worked with hated that McDonald's commercial except me. I got a kick out of it and laughed, and you know, for the entire 30 seconds every time it came on. But you know, once that thing was dead, and then the Bruins commercial comes back on, we have that on in the office. You know, I'm the only one laughing while everyone's rolling their eyes.
I do like that, and I guess I have seen, now that I think about it, I have seen that McDonald's commercial. I can't remember what they were hawking.
Talking about nuggets.
Yes, that's right. That's right. But I like
that.
They were the Kessel one. I like it. At first, I was like, I don't know if I should like this commercial or be a little scared because these guys love Phil Kessel so much. then I kind of.
Who do they have them for? I saw Kessel and Chara. And Thomas. Was there a Thomas one?
I'm not sure. I think it's the same one every time, isn't it?
No, there's a Chara one.
We saw a Chara one last night.
Well, I'm sure if you know, if all of our listeners end up partying with us in Denver, they'll hear many variations of that song.
They will. Myers. Pac Myers, what?
I need to get a hat like that with the ear flaps and the tassels.
We'll come up with a special one for college hockey stats.
Myers.
Tim Danaghy.
Puck Myers.
Inventor of the internet.
He and Al Gore.
A bunch of tubes, Danaghy said.
But yeah, those commercials, you probably can, I'm assuming you can go to YouTube and find them, or...
I'll tell you what, we will link.
Yes, we will.
We'll find it for you, and we will link to it.
From the podcast page.
On our podcast archive page, yes, we will do that. Further deterioration?
It's
anybody?
Pretty cool. I think it's a cool commercial.
I think my reaction to it is as follows. If I saw it every day, I probably wouldn't like it very much.
Right.
But seeing it a couple times a week is okay.
Yeah, exactly.
And I see it every day, and I love it.
All right, Rook.
There you go.
I got to have more.
I love what Rook loves. Happy belated, Rook.
Oh, thank you, Gladdy.
Yeah.
Birthday season?
Happy belated. It is birthday season.
Thank you.
What does this make you, a Libra?
I am one quarter of a century.
A Libra is September.
Oh, that's right.
Ish.
What's your sign for the ladies out there?
The not cool one.
Cancer?
Cancer. Emphysema? Yeah, what is your sign?
I'm an Aquarius.
Aquarius. The age of the Aquarius is 25 years old.
actually got some tape from your birthday party a couple days ago. Here it is.
We're finally going to get our drink, though. Chicken, chicken, yeah!
That's fantastic. I knew that tape was going around the internet, but I didn't realize it got out to Michigan. Right?
Yeah, oh yeah. You'd be surprised.
That newfangled internet. It's something else. More teaser for the next podcast. Jess Myers wants to talk about professional signings.
Oh, he does.
Is that has been a hot topic lately.
Yes. In fact, the GMs, I believe, are meeting with the commissioners...
A couple weeks. Next
this,
week.
No, this
February,
week. I
February
thought it was this
19th?
Week.
I think it's February 1920.
It's down in Naples.
Yes, it is down
Florida,
in Florida,
not Italy.
If there are important college hockey decisions to be made, it's down in Naples, Florida.
Because it's centrally located for the hockey world.
Yes. In fact, I think you drive through it between Kalamazoo and East Lansing.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Well, I think apparently it's well college worth hockey it. Is run by U.S. senators.
It is?
Well, you know, you got the government people who are always spending our tax dollars on their expensive vacations to the Bahamas and so forth and so on.
Ah, gotcha.
That's where I'm going with it.
Oh.
Gotcha.
they're laughing at you, not with you.
laughing at the jokes is not as good as laughing at the laugh track.
I'm assuming Jess Myers will want to talk Army hockey.
Yeah, great trip. And they're hot.
No, he's the Army. He's the pimp for West Point now.
We should get him to some more St. Cloud State games then.
It'd help if they win a few more.
They'll be fine. Tomorrow morning, baseball hearings. Anybody going to watch? I'll be watching.
Absolutely not.
Not going to watch, Rook?
I'll read about it.
Yeah, that's true.
I want to see the official downfall of Roger Clemens.
Could happen.
It doesn't look good for him.
Does not at this stage look very good for him.
So did Pettit turn on him? Did that happen?
He did. He did. There was just a report that said Pettit said that Clemens had talked about using HGH.
Oh, boy.
It's too bad because Rogers is such a nice guy.
My question is, what is Susan Waldman's reaction to all of this?
Rogers in Congress's box.
He is, too.
All the amazing things I've ever seen.
Unbelievable. Yeah, he's pretty much, well, I don't want to say dead to rights yet, but maybe he'll pull a Sammy Sosa and pretend he can't speak English.
You know, it wouldn't surprise me the way this thing has turned, you know, with McNamee keeping, you know, pretty much everything but a stool sample from 2000. And
you don't
Clemens
know yet.
Wife.
Yeah, right. We'll wait till
you're
tomorrow.
Right. And then Clemens' wife, you know, using HGH for a cover shoot or a photo shoot. I mean, this is amazing. We need VH1 to be taping this thing. I need a reality show.
Yeah, no kidding. Celebrity rehab.
I just have this strange suspicion that Rusty Harden's going to raid every little leaguer in the Metro DC area, get his glove, and bring it to Congress and have Roger try on a 500 little league gloves. It doesn't fit. It doesn't fit.
Yeah.
The glove don't fit. You must quit.
Exactly.
That's exactly right.
We'll see.
And by the way, I have to mention that Andy Pettit, I thought, was great in all those American Pie movies. No, no way.
Jim?
Yeah.
We're done.
Punch the clock.
Thank you for listening to another InsideCollegeHockey.com podcast. We have it to share our opinions. We certainly did that, and you're entitled to yours as well.
Just keep it to yourself.
This is a one-way forum. If we care what you think, we'll subscribe to your podcast.
Send all questions and complaints to Jess, J-E-S-S, at InsideCollegeHockey.com.
No, but call him. 6-1.
Here's Jess Meyer's phone number. 1-800-GO-ARMY.
He prefers to be reached between like 1 and 6 a.m.
Is that Eastern or Pacific?
That's his office.
Both.
Both. That's his office hours.
I hope his kids don't set off any smoke alarms while he's on the Army campus.
All right. Thanks for listening to an H podcast. We'll have another one soon.